The following program brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal, and any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any persons for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax. Penalties that may be imposed on such persons and each listener should seek advice from their tax advisor or legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice, and nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show. Hey everyone, welcome to the show, Your Money with David Hayes. Thanks for hanging out with me. We're going to have a fun one today. Dr. Doug Hughes, not really a doctor, but I sure call him that, will be joining me in a few minutes. We haven't had Dougie on in this calendar year yet, 2022. You know, I'm approaching my 52nd birthday, which means I'm over half a century old. We used to have a saying with my buddies, I'm nearly half done. I think I'm about three quarters done at this point. But yeah, on January 16th, of the year 1970, old Dave came into this earth, on this earth, and that will be 52. And hopefully, folks, I have a long, long, many, many years ahead of me, and hopefully many of those will be right here with you on the big show. Hey, we're going to have a good one today. Like I said, we had the markets get off to kind of an up-and-down start. We are now into 2022, 4 years remaining with these historically low tax rates, what to do early in the year to start moving money to tax-free. All that and more. But before we get to that, let's do a little news of the week. Brought to you by Lance Like at the Like Law Group. Give yourself and your family the peace of mind in here in 2022 with proper estate planning. Call my friend Lance at the Like Law Group, 812-323-8300. And Kenny Bland Auctions, they are for sure your full-service auction service. They offer the pre-planning, the sale of your estate or real estate. Visit them online at KennyBlandAuctions.com and see what they have going this week. And finally, Unrivaled Electric, they are your full-service electrical contractor. They specialize in generators. Hopefully we don't need those this winter, but you never know. Solar arrays, veteran-owned, Unrivaled Electric wants to be your electrician like they are mine. Give them a call, 812-361-3604. All right, Democrat Joe Biden, of course, began his second calendar year as the president, number 46, last week. Democrats also maintain control of Congress with a voting majority in the House and Senate. Over the last 60 years, when you have this situation when one party controls both the White House and the House of Representatives, the Senate, the S&P has gained, and I'm not promising anything, 11.9%. The S&P was up 11% in the fourth quarter of 2021, the 19th time in the last 30 years that the index has at least a 10% gain in a quarter. Let's see, the previous 18 quarters when the index was up double digits, the next quarter was up 17 of 18 times. When good things happen, good things follow. The U.S. stock market grew by $12 trillion, that's with a T, in the calendar year 2021, from $41 trillion to $53 trillion as of the end of this year. Now, I want you to put this in perspective. I'll get to this in a minute. We're nearly $30 trillion in debt as a country. We would have to liquidate three-fourths of the entire stock market to pay for the debt. That puts things in perspective. Not doing a lot, and as happened with the Trump administration as well, when he came in and the Republicans controlled both the House of Representatives as well and the Senate. The current session of Congress has only passed 81 bills with a year to go, the fewest number of bills passed in any two-year session of Congress going way back to 1973, when they passed 284 during the 112th session of Congress that ran from 2001 to 2012. Kind of interesting. The United States debt, as I mentioned, increased by nearly $10 trillion in the last 5 years, rising from $19.9 trillion to nearly $30 trillion as of the end of last year. That comes from the U.S. Treasury Department. It's getting ready to become tax season, but 32% of the 148 million tax returns that were filed in the year 2019, that's the last year we've had data released, did not pay any federal income tax, or a total of 46.7 million tax returns. I'm all about financial literacy, financial awareness, trying to help people understand the basics of what they need to do to succeed. But in Utah, they have the top financial literacy requirement for its high school students out of any of the 50 U.S. states. Utah actually requires all of its high school students to take a half-year course dedicated to personal finance and then a final exam administered by the state. Ohio is the latest U.S. state to add some form of financial literacy instruction at the high school level. That's effective January 27th, my mother's birthday, 2022. 37 states do not tax Social Security benefits, while the other 13 states may or may not tax, depending on other factors, including like total income. Hey, folks, this is easy money grab. Right now in Indiana and many other states, they do not tax Social Security. In Social Security at the federal level, the maximum is 85% of your benefits subject to tax. These are the small levers that can be pulled to not increase tax rates, but certainly increase tax revenues. And Social Security is a big one because how many people are beneficiaries currently and plan to be over the next 10 years. And unemployment, it is extremely low across the country. Five states, Georgia, Nebraska, Oklahoma, Utah, and West Virginia just recorded their lowest unemployment rates ever in November of 2021. And of course, we've been tracking this all the way since 1976. So it's not just here, it's also everywhere. Let's check this one out. I'm just going to throw it in for fun. It's Alabama versus Georgia, right? In the college football national championship game that happened on Monday night. If this is prior to the game happening, an Alabama victory would give Nick Saban his eighth national title as head coach, his current seven titles with sixth Alabama, one with LSU, the most ever in college football history. And I went to bed at halftime because I could not stay awake. The score was 9-6, Alabama. And when I woke up, the Bulldogs had pulled it off. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, the markets are off to an up and down start. What happened last week? What's going on this week? Things we should be thinking about and more. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Doug Hughes has not yet made it into the studio, but he texts me, and he is on his way. Trying to park. Big surprise, right? Students are back, so he'll be up here in just a second. You know, last week, we kind of had the tech wreck, we would call it. The perception of a much more hawkish Fed put a hard stop to the year's positive start and pushed bond yields higher and stocks into a pretty broad retreat. Technology and other high valuation shares were particularly hit hard by rising yields. Even the large cap tech companies with strong cash flows and profits, they were dinged as well. As yields tend to trend higher, investors are kind of like questioning if these companies can lead the market in 2022. Of course, when rates go up, the market doesn't tend to want to pay up for earnings and the values come down. Then you had fueling this decline was a four-day sell-off of technology companies by hedge funds that in dollar terms represent the highest level in more than 10 years. So then stocks continued to struggle into the final days of trading and then unsettled by a renewed climb in yields in kind of an ambiguous employment report. But then we had the Fed surprise. Minutes of the December, and this doesn't happen often, minutes of the December FOMC meeting were released last week. That's the Federal Open Market Committee. And it revealed a little more of a hawkish Fed than what the market had expected. One surprise was that the first rate hike in interest rates could occur as early as March of this year. Another and perhaps more consequential surprise was the idea of beginning a balance sheet runoff by the Fed following the first hike coming in potentially March. I don't know if that'll happen or not, but certainly it's on the table. A balance sheet runoff simply means the maturing bonds will not be replaced with new bonds, the result of which a smaller Fed balance sheet would happen. Many view this step as removing liquidity from the system, a departure from the market expectations that the balance sheet would remain flat during the Fed's pivot to more normalized, whatever that means, monetary policy. So that was last week. And then we turn around this week and we're off to, you know, we kind of went down and now we're making a little rally here on Thursday as the show is taking place. This is what you're going to expect for all this year. We're going to have little bumps along the way. It's going to be very Fed driven. But the bottom line is when you look at your own investment accounts, what are you doing? You know, what are you investing this money for? Is it for a new this or that that's coming in the next year or two? Well, get that money out of the market, silly, because anything can happen at any time. Now, if it's money that you don't think you're going to need for a while, just keep it in there. Most of you listening are working folks. You have 401ks at work. You're plugging the money in each and every paycheck. And that's okay to have volatility. When the market's up, you're buying a few less shares. When the market's down, you're buying more shares. But in the end, that dollar cost averaging works out, and people become wealthy if they do it the right way, especially if you start early. And I'm so appreciative of everyone who gets their arm around that young person that just started at the factory or the new office person that came in or whatever and says to you, hey, have you been told about this 401k plan? Most of them say yes because they went through the HR thing. How much are you doing? Oh, they said they matched 3%, so I'm putting in 3%. That's when you take your other hand and you kind of slap them along the side of the head and say, no, it's 10%. Now, of course, that's different for every age, but if you're young and you can put at least 10% away with the match of the employer, if it's 3, 4, 6, who knows what it might be, don't just take the free money, put as much as you can away, but certainly the 10%. And this is the most important piece to this, if there's a Roth option, and most of the time there is, you stick it there. Because that money is done. It's over. You paid the tax. Now, all the money that grows in that account grows tax-free. And can you imagine being a 30-year-old and 30 years later waking up with a couple $1 million in your retirement account and it's all tax-free? And you look over the schmuck next to you with $3 million in his 401k and it's all taxable? And you're looking at him thinking, yeah, I know you have three, but I have two. I've already paid all the tax on mine. What about you? It sounds like a nursery rhyme. You're better off. I've actually gone through several exercises with people in the last month or so, going through an intentional Roth conversion plan that we would do this much this year, next year, and we slowly see their assets shift from taxable to tax-free. And at the end of their plan, or when they finally pass away, and there's all this money that's going to be left for the heirs, first of all, they may say, we don't want that to happen. We want to use more of our money. But nonetheless, at the end, you have this big pile of tax-free money and very little taxable money. And it may even say at the end of your plan, you have $3 million. But then under the Roth conversion, it could say I have 2.7. Well, what would you rather have? $3 million that's all taxable or 2.7 that's not taxable to your heirs? Well, that's an easy answer, right? The 2.7, especially when it is inherited to your kids or grandkids and they have all that money that they can take out, and not the first year, but they could leave it for 10 years under current law. Can you imagine then allowing that to grow and double potentially over a 10-year period of time and take that nearly $3 million, turn it into $6 million tax-free? They're going to call it criminal by the time. They're going to say, you have actually taken advantage of the system because you have too much money tax-free, and you're going to say, you know what? No, I'm not. This guy told me at work years ago to put it here, and then this other guy, when I was retired, told me to do this, and next thing you know, I don't know the guy's name. I think he used to have a radio show. He's dead and gone by now, but thanks to him, we have all this tax-free money. I hear the laugh of Doug Hughes in the studio, so we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to discuss this concept that we've discussed over the years on how you invest your money should somewhat be determined on how you make your money. When we come back, we're going to discuss, are you a stock? Or are you more like a bond? It's Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Our tennis expert, Doug Hughes, is in the studio. And by the way, also a pretty darn good financial advisor as well. Happy New Year, Dougie. You haven't been on the show this year yet.
I know. Exciting. It's hard to believe we're just already a couple of weeks into January. But yeah, Happy New Year to everyone out there and look forward to a good 2022.
And it's off to a very quick start for us. Yes. Very, very active at the office. You and I attended a great conference about a week ago.
Yeah.
Both of us have now recovered because the jet lag was pretty enormous. And I know there's some pictures of me covered with my head covered up on the airplane that have not yet been
there
exposed.
Might be
a few incriminating
there might be
pictures.
A couple of photos out there.
Yeah, you know, it's the
but
way
hey,
it goes.
It was it worked well for you, and that's the main thing.
It did work well. We were actually in Honolulu, for those of you wanting to know, a five-hour time change. So I pick up Hughes. Hughes lives in my neighborhood at 5 a.m. Mm-hmm. on Wednesday morning. This trip, literally, we're coming home Sunday. So that's a short trip for Hawaii. But, you know, you and I are together with Wayne from the office. Wayne's wife was there, but, you know, my spouse wasn't there. Yours wasn't there. So we were. This was a business trip, although we had, you know, fun as well, as we always do. So our plane is slightly delayed out of Indianapolis. You and I get to San Francisco. We have, was it 4 minutes, 12 minutes to make it till the plane leaves?
Well, it may not have been four, but it wasn't quite 12. I mean, we're talking about quick. 8 or 9. It was a quick move.
And
it was the range, you're right. That's the range they told us, 4 to 12. I think we had ended with 8 or 9, but it was quite a sprint.
And chalk it up to good, clean living or whatever you want to, but thankfully the gate was only a few away, so you and I sprinted out like a rabbit out of a brush pile.
Yeah.
And we made it to the plane, but then you had to do the Clear Hawaii thing, and you had your stuff together. Mine was not together. I was like just a mess. So we get on the new plane, and boy, we're on, and we're off to Honolulu. So we get to Honolulu we get to our hotel 4:30. Mm-hmm. We have a dinner to attend at 6. Now do the math. We're 5 hours removed, right? So it's like 11 o'clock at home, and I keep saying, I can't think about it. 2-hour meal or whatever, and by that time it's 1 in the morning. Both of us are completely wiped out. We're headed to the sack. Now, what? You're wide awake at 4 a.m., right? Your eyes are at 3, 4, whatever.
Yes.
And so we go and we do this. We have conference. It was great. Everything was fantastic. But then Sunday comes around, and there's no sessions on Sunday, if I recall, right? It's a free day. So I got up that morning around 7, so I'm fairly acclimated. Mm-hmm. But then our plane doesn't leave until 11:40 p.m. Honolulu time. That means we're 4:40 a.m. Indiana time.
Right.
I mean, you and I'm walking around the airport, looking at Facebook, whatever I can do to keep myself awake. So the first thing we do, get on the plane and attempt to go to sleep. And I did some, but if you think about it, I rolled into my house, because you had a different arrangement to get home, but I rolled into my house at 6:30 in the evening. Now, I just granted stopped to, you know, get gas and all that kind of stuff. Watched the national championship game at halftime, went to bed. So I lost an entire day. So when I had a 7 a.m. meeting on Tuesday morning, I didn't know what day it was, where I was, nothing.
Yeah.
But here, about Wednesday, Thursday of this week, here we are on Thursday, I'm back to normal.
Back to normal, ready to go.
Ready to go.
You know, the one travel tidbit we would give to everyone is that if you do have a really late night flight out of, like, somewhere 4 or 5 hours, make sure you have an activity to do for part of the day, because we really didn't have an activity planned. So by the evening, we're just kind of hanging out at the hotel, just thinking to ourselves, we should be on an 8 o'clock plane.
I think I told Misty, if you could arrange about a 9:30 flight out of Honolulu or Hawaii,
get your day, and
that'd
then,
be perfect, because then you would be able to sleep on the plane. You wake up, hopefully, wherever you and I would go straight to Chicago, because that's a good long trip. Wake up 4 in the morning, 5 in the morning, ship down to Indy, home. That might be a little bit better.
Yeah.
One of the things you and I have talked about over the years, Doug, is when you invest, you should give some consideration to how you made the money that's being invested. And I'm going to say two quick things, and I'm going to turn it over to you. I just met with someone prior to doing the show today who had sold some real estate, never really had been an investor as far as stocks go.
Mm-hmm.
And he had risked a lot in many ways to get the money that he had through this real estate venture. And now here he is sitting in front of me, and it's like, what do I do? Well, he wasn't comfortable putting it in the stock market, and because of how he made it, he's like, I really don't want to have any chance of losing it. Very good thought, right? Very good thought. So we talked him through that, and we have a plan. The other thing, I have a couple friends that are in the construction business, right? Very cyclical, ups and downs, cost controls, employment issues, whatever. And yeah, they've had some pretty decent years. So one of them said to me the other day, I don't want to put any more money in the stock market.
Mm-hmm.
So in his case, very, very up and down. And on the other hand, I've had some folks who have very stable positions, right? Making good money, really no reason to think that anything will change. And they're full on. Let's keep dumping fuel into the fire. So I think it is interesting to look at the mentality of how you earn your money versus how you might be investing your money. And therefore, the great book by our friend, Are You a Stock or Are You a Bond? Became a bestseller.
Well, and there's no doubt, David, one of the things that has happened in this retirement recipe that we've been given as Americans is that the the idea is you need to be 60-40, 70-30, 80-20. You find this perfect allocation percentage, and that's exactly how you should put your money and how it should be invested. But the truth is we all come at income from a different angle. And so the idea of are you a stock or a bond is exactly what you just outlined. If you are in employment, maybe self-employed, and your income goes up and income goes down, and you may have bad years, you may have home run years, then maybe your allocation to investing, which is putting money aside for future use, should be more stable, more predictable, not have quite as much volatility to it. The flip side is if you're working, let's say, as a school teacher, Ryan and Wayne work with the school teachers around here a lot. They have an income that is kind of set and gets gradual increases along the way. But as a school teacher, you'd very seldom, if ever, hit a home run in your income and you know, get, you know, twice your income in a year or time and a half in a year. And so, therefore, you need growth on the side of the mm-hmm. the balance sheet. And so, you know, really looking at yourself, am I a stock? My income goes up and down. Or am I a bond where my income kind of stays generally the same with some gradual increases? And that's investing based on human capital and income structure, not just going out and saying, oh, someone says I need to have 60-40, so that's what I'll do. It's really taking a step back and saying, how should I be investing based upon my income? Because remember, the most successful investment plan is the one you stick with, not necessarily one you read about.
You know, and it's interesting because one of my good buddies back in 2008, 2009, we went through the great financial crisis. Mm-hmm. He was in the construction business. There were no more roofs to put on. Yep. No one was building houses. Unemployment was skyrocketing. And because he took that approach, lines of credit being called, I mean, it was a disaster.
Mm-hmm.
I remember, I'm going to go come back to this, but what's funny, this friend, he had just been at a trade show in Louisville with my younger brother, and they just bought this metal break. So they're in the roofing business, putting, you know, metal for roof flash or whatever. Just had committed to a multi-$100,000 machine, $300,000-$400,000 machine. And the word is out that, boom, the financial markets are collapsing all around us. You know, things are just going crazy. McDonald's employees may not be able to cash their checks. I mean, you may remember all this.
I remember it, yes.
And they call me, and they said, hey, are you okay? And I go, what do you mean? They go, well, with everything going on, we just wanted to make sure you weren't in your garage with your car running. And I said, now you know better than that. I can't get my car in my garage.
Yeah.
but the point was that my friend, the reason he wasn't worried is because any of the money that he had saved was not down 30% in the mm-hmm. market. Mm-hmm. It was sitting there nice and secure in a nice safe spot.
Yeah.
So he actually turned around and built his house that year. He said, yeah. I'm going to take all my employees, I'm going to keep them employed, and then we're going to build my new house.
Awesome.
So during the financial crisis, product was cheap. Employment was cheap, and he had money to do it, and it's because he didn't fall into that trap of, mm-hmm. oh, I have to be in the market.
Right.
He is a stock. He owned his company. His business is cyclical. I wish I had him on right now. He'll tell you that, boy,
absolutely.
He fought me tooth and nail on that idea, but he was so happy he bought into it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying he didn't have any money in the market.
Sure.
I mean, he was at that time 40. Mm-hmm. And he certainly had a 401k that we had set up that he had money in the market. But anything outside of that, he did not have it in the market, and it saved his bacon. And then around him, all of the businesses that did what he did started failing and falling apart.
Yep.
So when the market came back, he could write his ticket, mm-hmm. right? He was the only dog in town doing the stuff that he was, or not only one, but just one of a few, and it was great.
Exactly. And you know, David, when you build a business, and we're talking about a self-employed business person here, and you have this volatility of income, you know, I think back to us. Our houses were
right.
down in value. Our incomes were down just due to markets because we align our compensation with our clients' returns. And then our own personal investments. So all three things that we personally would have were down all at the same time. But you know, it didn't go down. Is my mortgage payment, if you know what I'm saying? I mean,
yeah.
So those fixed payments, they continue to go on while your income is doing that. And that's another erosion that people who are more like stocks, I mean, they may come in and you may run into them if they're your friends and your siblings and have, man, you wouldn't believe how much money I made last year. Well, the pendulum can swing the other way, and it can even it can even out over a 5 or 10 year period as well. So you want to be able to build a not just a retirement account, but a financial plan. And let's go to financial planning for just a minute. We always talk about having a coordinated financial plan is different than just having a diversified financial plan. A coordinated financial plan assumes those kind of events, and it helps you to perhaps put your business in, you know, you want to be in a position in your business where you're the last one standing if things go wrong. Mm-hmm. Well, how do you become the last one standing if things really begin to collapse? Well, it's when you have a well-coordinated financial plan with some cash, with some opportunity to absorb these big shocks, and then, of course, have money at work, too.
And not overextended on debt. That's exactly. Always the key. Yeah. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we are now in the year 2022. It's hard to believe. 4 years remaining until these historically low tax rates expire. What do you want to do early in this year to start moving money to tax-free? We'll talk about that. I can't wait because it's going to be super exciting, and you're going to want to do it immediately. You're going to want to call your HR person like right away.
Yes.
This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. Hey, I've been working, getting the podcast up and running. We had a little bit of a hiccup just because we had a few people out sick at the office, but I do have a couple in the can, as they call it. I'm going to do a few more. They're like even maybe tonight and tomorrow. So next week, I'll have at least 4 ready to rock and roll. So my anticipated release date will be next week, likely after this show. So what I'm attempting to do, and hopefully we'll get some good feedback along the way, is bring up a topic during the show and then say, you know what, in upcoming podcasts, we're going to take a deep dive into that conversation, that topic. And because the podcast room is right in my office, and it's pretty cool if you ever want to stop by and take a peek at it, come on by. It's fun to look at and to, you know, just kind of envision what it's like to be sitting there talking to nobody. You're just sitting here talking. Mm-hmm. But it'll be great. The first few episodes is more an introduction to the concept, so I don't know that I'll get right into the groove of pointing things out in the show that we talk about during the podcast. But so that being said, we are excited that it will be launched soon. And people tell me to do podcasts, you have to do it because you love to do it, not because you think people are listening. And I think that's true with a lot of things in life. If you want to get enjoyment out of it, you have to enjoy it first. And if you enjoy it, it's likely other people will as well. So here we are into 2022, 4 years remaining until these historically low tax rates go away. And when I say 4 years, you might be saying, wait, Dave, you said 2025. Yeah, 2025, the final drive, says at the end of 2025. So get your fingers and toes out. Actually, you just need your hand. Count on my fingers. 2022, 2023, 2024, 2025. That's 4 years, right? Even though it may think 2022, 2025, 3 years, but it's 4 years. We have this year and 3 more to do some things with our moolah. Let's talk to working people first. You've been putting your money away tax-free, hopefully, right? Not putting it into the tax later side. The money that your employer puts in for you, you'll pay tax later on that. So like I say many times before, you'll have plenty of money to pay tax on later. But you want to look at in-plan Roth conversions. How much money should I be moving within my plan? How much should I say, hey, shift this money over to this account? I'll pay the tax now. Let me give you a quick example. Let's say you're sitting around married filing joint. You guys are making $150,000 a year. Well, your taxable income after your deductions is about $125,000. You're actually in the 12% bracket. You want to max out the 12%, and don't be afraid of getting into 22, but you can go all the way up to 178 grand before you actually move into the 22% bracket. Now remember, even if you move into 22, it's not a big deal. It's the next dollar that's taxed at 22, not everything, just that next dollar. But nonetheless, here we are sitting with $125,000 taxable income. I can convert $53,000 to my Roth 401k and pay the tax of $6,300. That's it. Federal tax, $6,300. Now, how do you pay for the $6,300? Well, you can't pay it with the money inside your plan, especially if you're under, they don't allow it, but if you were under the age of 59 and a half, doing a Roth conversion outside the plan or inside the plan, you need the money to pay the tax, because anything that comes out of that IRA would be considered an early distribution and it would be subject to a 10% penalty. So believe it or not, and I'm talking quick, the $6,300, if you had that withheld, that's considered early distribution. You pay a 10% penalty on the $6,300. You don't want to do that. You need to come up with the money outside. So let's say that you get paid every 2 weeks. That's 26 pays a year. What you would want to do is say, okay, I owe $6,300. Hey, HR, would you please withhold an extra $240 a pay in taxes to pay for this conversion? If you do it early in the year, you're never going to miss it. But what if I say, well, let's say I get a refund of about $2,300 a year. Okay, I'm going to owe $6,300. $2,300 of it's usually in a refund. So now you have $4,000 to pay taxes on. Divide that by 26 pays. Tell them to add an extra $150 a pay to withholdings. And then at the end of the year, it's all taken care of. And you've been able to move an additional $53,000 out of the crosshairs of higher taxes. And it's all tax-free. And not that it's tax-free, it grows tax-free. Can you imagine if you're 40 years old and money could double at 7.2% every, 10 years? If 50 years old, that's worth, $506,000. You go another 10 years, it's worth, $212,000. I've been trying to do the math quick, but hey, that's the math behind it. Now, this works really, really well, but you need to do it early in the year. The other thing I would consider, if I'm a little bit older and maybe I'm in a situation where I have extra income, front load your contributions and find out if your employer allows for after-tax contributions. Not all of them do, but some of them do. So I max out my 401k early in the year, and then after that's maxed out, then everything I put in goes to the after-tax bucket, which means I pay the tax, but it goes to an account that I've already paid tax on. The gains grow tax deferred. But the cool thing is when you retire, all that money you put away tax after tax can be rolled into your Roth. It's kind of like a mega Roth contribution. So Doug, I think there's so many things that people just let get away from them. And it's January of 2022, enormous opportunity for people to do some planning that they can pay for now gradually out of their paycheck or otherwise and probably never even miss it.
You know, David, when we teach the class retirement planning today, one of the lines that I wish we all had heard 20, 30 years ago that is used in that particular class is, don't make investment decision based on tax laws today. And, if you went back to prior to there being a Roth, and the whole idea for everyone was, no matter who you are, you'll be in a lower tax bracket when you retire.
Right.
And that's how the whole line went. Now, if we'd have been able to go back in time and there was a Roth, and we were able to say to people, listen, don't make all your financial decisions based on today's current tax laws, we'd be having a different conversation. But that was what people did.
That was the narrative.
It's the narrative. It was the story. And now, where is everyone's money at? It's in their home, and it's in their 401k, and has, to your point, a big tax mortgage on it. Folks, listen, you need to take a step back, and it may not be conventional. It may not sound like everyone else around you, but you need to take a step back and recognize investing is not just about how did the S&P 500 do. Investing is about analyzing the risk and return, analyzing the taxation, and analyzing how it fits in your portfolio. Taxation being one of the bigger factors in your investment plan,
mm-hmm.
and we need to pay better attention to that and understand what's in front of us in this time frame that we have with us.
We'll take a quick break. We'll come back kind of hanging on to this topic just briefly. What's the best use of my extra money? Is it paying down my debts? Most people say, yeah, that's a good idea. Or is it paying off taxes? When we come back, we'll continue this conversation. And what is the best use of my extra moolah? What should I be doing with it? It's Your Money with David Hayes. You know, I'm not going to have time today to get into this, but I actually had it listed on my outline to talk about the tax code's uneven strides against inflation. And it's a little bit of a history lesson on this is probably better in a podcast format, but I'm still, not quite there yet. But it is the idea that if inflation is in the market, but wages have not kept up with inflation, that is one of the issues on why Social Security and Medicare seem to be so underfunded because those are payroll taxes. So if wages have been kept low, even though prices have increased, then that's one of the problems. Well, now you have inflation back, wages are increasing, more Social Security tax being paid in. Will that help right some of the problems? It's a pretty interesting study, and I get into a lot of other things that I've looked at that, but it is too much. In fact, too boring to be an entire show, so it's probably more of a podcast. But it certainly was on my outline, so I'd mention that. And, you know, we'll see. I may knock that out here in the next few days. All right, Doug, so, you know, it's been ingrained in us to pay down our debts, right? To pay off your mortgage before you retire, to pay off your credit cards, to pay off your student loans. And I think that's all righteous things to do and things you should be doing. But I think the question is, most do not think, like you brought up in the last segment, that I have a debt that I never think about, and that is the debt against your retirement accounts. If you have $1 million in a 401k, what's it really worth? Well, it's worth, if you pull it all out and you pay the tax and you go buy things, you're going to have about, you know, $550,000 to $600,000 because everything else went to pay off the taxes. Well, that's, like Doug said, a mortgage against your retirement account. So let's say you have an extra $1,000 a month. Should I pay down my car, put an extra on my house, put more money into my 401k or IRA? Like I said, all those are good ideas, but let's talk about a little more in a little more detail. Let's say you owe $5,000 on your car and your payment's $300 a month. I'd probably knock it out. It'll give you more to roll into other debt. You can knock out the smaller debts first with the largest payments, then roll into the next goal. That's kind of the snowball idea. Pay off your house by paying off the taxes on your IRA and 401k. If I'm looking at things, I'm thinking, okay, where is the most expensive debt that I have? Well, let's say I'm working, right? I can still service my debt. I'm going to jump on the most expensive debt first, which is the taxes. Let's say you have a mortgage. It may be in the 3% range. Well, your taxes are between 12 and 37% in most situations. So let's pay that off. Do you pay it all off at once? No, you do it slowly. If I have an extra $1,000 a month and I want to pay down my debts, that's $12,000 a year. Take $12,000 and divide it into your tax rate. That tells you how much money you could convert to a Roth. That's paying debts off. There's so many things that I want people to understand about what to do with your money, what's the best use of your extra money. And Doug, I'm telling you right now that you should focus on, first, knock out some of these small debts. That's a great idea. Roll that money into the next debt. But when you get to the point you're looking at your mortgage and your IRA, as you pointed out, two of your biggest assets, both have debts against them, which debt would I focus on? I personally, if your job is stable and you feel comfortable making your payments, like Doug said, your mortgage payment doesn't go down when the market does, then start to use that extra money to pay off the tax on the IRA. Now, can you do a little bit of both to make yourself feel better? Sure. But I would focus on the highest cost to my money, and that is bar none taxes. When I did an interview on a podcast a few years ago, they said, what is the most expensive thing in retirement? Well, guess what the answer they thought I was going to say? Healthcare. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, taxes. And they're like, what? Taxes? Yeah, taxes. And I went to explain why every dollar I pull out, I have to send 40 cents of it somewhere else. I said, there's nothing else out there more expensive than taxes. So that is the answer to that question. Doug, I'm going to take a big, deep breath. I wish we could talk about the interesting ways to look at the tax code in uneven strides against inflation. Yes. But that's a lot to talk about in such a short amount of time. Just a couple minutes before we have to take another break.
You know, David, when we talk about these things, everyone wants a simplified tax code. Everyone wants to be able to do their taxes on a postcard, as sometimes politicians say. You know, the dream idea that we're talking about here is really moving your finances to a place where you could almost do your taxes on a postcard.
Yeah, right.
Social Security, capital gains and dividends, and Roth distributions, which are tax-free.
Free.
And so it sounds so complex to people perhaps who have not thought a lot about all the taxes that they're dealing with, like you just described. But the truth is, not only is this tax freedom, it's also tax simplicity. And if tax simplicity is not part of your financial plan, it should be. And that's what we're doing. We're doing the hard work today to have a simple tax situation later on in retirement.
I had a fun conversation with someone the other day. He's a fisherman, I'm a fisherman, and we talked about when he retires, he wants to buy a new Ranger bass boat.
Yeah.
Well, that could be anywhere from, you know, $60,000 to $80,000 for a Ranger bass boat. So I'm like, when are you going to buy it? Well, I'll probably buy it in a couple of years when I retire. Okay, what's it going to cost? $60,000 to $80,000. Okay, where are you going to get the money? Oh, I figured I'll take it from my 401k. I said, well, you know, right now to get $80,000, you're probably going to need to take about $140,000 under current tax law. And I can't guarantee in the future what that rate will be. So that bass boat could very well cost you, you know, right, $180,000, $200,000.
Sure.
We're just talking federal and state only. Not getting into Medicare surtax premiums on your Medicare Part B, mm-hmm, or net investment surtax on your investment income once you go over $250,000 income. There's so many. I'm like, no. If it was all in a Roth and you wanted $60,000 to $80,000 for that bass boat, guess how much you get to take out? $60,000 or $80,000.
Right. Yeah.
No extra bonus for the government. Let's take a quick break and we'll come back. We got to wrap up. Okay. This is Your Money with David Ace. Yeah, don't you hate being cut off in mid-sentence, Susie?
Yeah, no, that's
happens
fine
all the time, right?
Yeah, so I was just going to say real quick, another way to view the bass boat is also people have $1 million and they come in and say, hey, I need $40,000 or $50,000 a year plus my Social Security, and that is going to be fantastic. I'll never run out of money because I'm under the 5% rule. The trick, though, is when someone needs 4 or 5% net in their hands, they're actually having to withdraw 6 to 8% to cover the tax. And a 6 to 8% distributing portfolio is invested much differently than a 3 to 4% distribution type portfolio. And a lot of people don't recognize a couple percent just due to taxes can really have an impact in market volatility when you're making withdrawals.
We are looking forward to 2022. The podcast, like I said, has a bit of work to be done, but we are working on it, and I'm hoping to report next week that it would be out in full force. Feeling great about it. I know everyone's excited in our office about what 2022 is to bring and what it has to offer. We're going to be meeting tomorrow morning to have our plans for 2022 put together as a group, myself, you, Wayne, Rhino, and the clan. So looking forward to that. Guys, I hope you have a great weekend. We'll talk to you again next week, everyone. Goodbye.
The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.